Welcome back to Startup to Success on KLOS 95.5 FM HD3, SoCalArmenian.com.
Yeah. Well, we all need therapists. Lord knows mine is helpful. And actually, another interesting thing is, as a startup guy, we end up being the therapists a lot of times. So right. Like building a startup, and I'm sure you know this, like, and they say like, well, you're going to fail your first four or five startups. And you're like, no, I'm not. I'm going to nail it on the first one. Yeah. And you're not, you're going to fail. And it's not even just because you didn't do everything perfectly. It's because starting a company takes so much, not just strategic thinking, willpower, but like mentally, like perfect maneuvering, right? And you just cannot achieve that until you fail enough times to know what your blind spots are, you know? And so a lot of, I've been told by more than a couple of clients that I'm like a brand therapist. I end up playing that role pretty well, because sometimes they're just like, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do with my employees. I don't, you know, like, I don't know what decision to make, you know, and just talking through. I don't know if that was your question. I think you had.
Oh, but that's a great answer, because I, you know, last summer I joined SBA's Emerging Leadership Program. It was like a 7-month program where they basically trained entrepreneurs, established entrepreneurs, how to take their business to the next level. And I want to say 3 chapters. It was, I think the entire course was maybe 12 chapters, and 3 chapters were covering financials, which as a serial entrepreneur, I've always just, every time there was a discussion with my accountant to talk about finances, I would just run away. Just like, you handle that stuff. I don't want to deal with it. And then when I took this, and when I was part of the program, and there was about 20 CEOs that we were selected to be in this program, and we worked really closely together, and we would, you know, work on projects together, and we had to share our personal business issues and finances together. Literally, we would go through our finances through QuickBooks via Zoom together. And that's when, and it's so crazy, after 20 years of being an entrepreneur, I guess, you know, somewhat successful in some areas and maybe failed in others. But I realized that was the problem, that I just never, even though I learned that in business school, and I had to take finance and accounting, and I was taught that, you know, but somehow I just didn't deal with the problem head on. And what I learned from that program was that if you're not good at it, just hire someone good. You know, just hire someone good. Don't just rely on having a CPA that's going to check in on you once a quarter or whatever, you know, to reconcile your books or whatever. And so it's just interesting. And another thing that I've learned is that I have to educate myself constantly, yeah. Not just in my profession as a marketer, but also, marketing is a whole different thing. I don't even want to talk about that, how rapidly it changes. But yeah. Just as an entrepreneur, it's constant education. It's to me, it's one of the most amazing careers anyone can have, but it's also one of the hardest things to do. And it's the one that gets the least respect. Sometimes it aggravates me when I ask younger kids, I'm like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And they're like, well, my mom wants me to become a lawyer or a doctor. I'm like, what's wrong with entrepreneurship? You know, everything around you that's amazing that you're enjoying is there because of an entrepreneur. Okay. Every single thing. So I'm like, what's wrong with being an entrepreneur? So yeah. What's your thought on that?
I have so many. And I think it is, the interesting thing about that is nobody cares until you're successful. And I actually drew a comic strip of this because I was having the same thought, and I sometimes draw comic strips for myself. And it was, what was it? Oh, it was 2 ants. All right. And they were standing next to a flower that was trying to grow. And the ants were just sort of like looking at the flower, and they were seeing it struggle and move back and forth. And the ants were like, look at this asshole, right? Like, look at him trying to do something. And the next day the ants come back and they're like, look at him still trying. And the, you know, the flower's grown a little bit more. Day 3, the ants are like, can you believe this guy? Like, just give it up, bro. Day 4, the flower blooms. And the ants are like, oh my God, this is beautiful. What's it like to be an overnight success? I can't believe it. And I think that's what happens, right? Like, you're an asshole, excuse my French, until you succeed. And then people think it happened overnight and nobody sees the process. And that's maybe the hardest part, truthfully. It's little snippets. Like, I remember especially when I was doing the first company, I didn't know if what I was doing was any good or if anybody cared at all. But every 6 months we'd go to a trade show. And that was kind of my marker. And I would be like, oh, maybe I'm okay at this. Like people seem to like I'm interacting with a person who's looking at the thing I made and getting any kind of feedback. Now you can get it a lot quicker, but this was like pre-Instagram back then, right? So like you were doing stuff and you couldn't get that instant feedback. So anyway, I don't know if that answers your question.
Tell me a little bit about your thoughts on social media. And I would love to dive into marketing a little bit too, since you guys do digital marketing. I just want to understand from your perspective, especially for a startup, if they're wondering where they should focus on when it comes to marketing, you know, what your thoughts are on that? Where have you seen success?
I think it depends on the startup again. I think there is a certain amount of like table stakes. You kind of just have to have like a good looking Instagram, Facebook, Twitter base level. It has to exist and you have to update it for the most part, unless you're like a really, you know, defined B2B space. I mean, it would have to really not make sense. If you're making consumer product, it kind of has to exist because the first thing people are going to do, they're not going to type in your brand name to go to your website. They're going to type it in Instagram, right? And if it looks janky or it's not there, they're not going to trust you. Yeah. So I have mixed feelings about social media in general, but fortunately or unfortunately, you kind of just have to do it until, you know, whatever version of Web3 takes over and now we're all, you know, everything has changed.
I'm so anxiously waiting for that because, I started doing influencer marketing back in 2010 when bloggers were really hot and I used to do experiential marketing. Have you heard of Kitson? They used to be really, I started doing experiential marketing for Kitson where we would gather a bunch of bloggers and celebrities and, you know, all the stylists and everyone and just do fun parties at the stores on Robertson and other places. And then slowly influencer marketing started picking up and I actually joined the corporate world for a little bit just to learn, gain experience and understand the influencer space. And back then it was really working. It wasn't as saturated. It was really working. Honestly, the things we were able to do, but I always mixed DR, direct response type of marketing, with influencer marketing, where I would have the influencers use promo codes to promote something. And, you know, and then when I was working at New York Times, we were managing, you know, clients that were Tiffany and Louis Vuitton and Royal Caribbean, you know, with big budgets, and they wanted big influencers to promote them and create content and so on. And it was so interesting. Even back then, back in 2000, I want to say 15, when I was doing this, my clients would come to me and say at New York Times, and they would say, "Hey, we spent $500,000. How do we know, you know, did this generate any ROI?" And I remember going to my boss and asking that question. And my boss was like, "Hey, we're a branding agency. We're not a, you know, we're not a direct response driven agency. So we can't show ROI. It's a halo effect. It's the social media that, you know." Even then I questioned it. I was just like, I don't know how well it's working. And when I started my agency, I decided to do city takeover campaigns so that I could see the baseline lift in each city. Because with influencer marketing, you can't really tie it back to any sales because you don't get much sales. You can spend $20,000-$30,000 every month and barely maybe get 2 or 3 sales a month. I mean, depending on the product too. Yeah. With that said, over the last few years is when I'm really seeing a decline in even the baseline lift. I'm just not seeing anything. And it's just been so hard as a marketing agency owner to convince my clients that they need to have social media more like a storefront. You know, you got to have it kind of like in the old days, we used to have a business card and it was a must. But don't rely on it and don't invest too much money in it because you just don't know. Like, it's just not going to work as well as it used to. And specifically with CBD brands, you know, I own a CBD brand that I started, I want to say 2.5 years ago, almost 3 years ago. And I started that. It was so accidental. I started it to simply make something for myself that had no THC. And it just, and as a, entrepreneur, I was like, well, I might as well do a nice packaging. Well, I might as well do this. And then I just kind of just ended up being this really beautiful product. And then a few pharmacies and friends were like, hey, you know, we know you took it to a lot of labs and tested and it's pretty solid and good, you know, why don't we sell it? Can we sell it? And so it just evolved organically. My intention was not to have a CBD brand, especially at a time when it's so competitive. But the challenges right. that I'm dealing with when it comes to social media is I feel like I'm shadow banned, number one. Our followers don't see 70% of our followers don't see the content we're posting. And it's just so frustrating. I almost want to just say, screw you all. I'm just not going to be on these platforms. I'm going to go on the next thing. But then I'm like, okay, well, you know, like when is Web.3 going to be available? Like what's the next thing, you know? So yeah.
It's fair. I mean, I totally feel you and I get the same vibes depending on the brand. And it kind of just, I think in that scenario, the opportunity is to like, let it ride, you know? Yeah. But don't think of Instagram, don't give it so much energy. Cause I think also the tides are shifting against, you know, Instagram, Facebook, all this stuff. People are more interested in things like TikTok and that's always gonna change. And now there's all this Twitter news. And so I think for any brand, it's like, what can you do that is completely different? That has nothing to do with any of that stuff. What if you know, got the addresses of every one of your customers and sent them a handwritten letter or a cool postcard. Like, not that that's a good idea. It's probably not that great of an idea, but things that are like, you know, instead of being frustrated about Instagram,
right.
let it exist because it has to.
Yeah.
And then just get really creative, like the fun part, the same thing that inspired you to do the CBD in the first place, that part of your brain, right? That's like, okay, well, if I were me, what's something that I would enjoy doing the same way I enjoyed thinking of the good packaging and like right. testing the product and making right. something beautiful? What's something I could do to get attention that has nothing to do or maybe incorporates it, but it falls outside of this realm of like, you know, traditional Instagram social stuff. I wish I had the perfect answer, but I don't.
You know, no, but it's very helpful because, you know, my agency, what we do is when we do our city takeover campaigns, it's always, we partner the brands with influential people, impactors and impressors. And sometimes the influential people, and by influential people, we mean like all kinds of people. They could be teachers. They could be anybody that has an influence, you know, whatever target audience that we're trying to target, you know, depending on the client and the service. And so, you know, we believe in other people talking about their experiences and authentic sort of testimonial type things, right? So if I partner, let's say one of your clients with a podcast host, then I would want to make sure that the podcast host uses the product, loves it, and is authentically promoting it. And then we'll take that and amplify it. And it's just, sometimes it's so challenging being at this stage of marketing and then having a brand new startup that is literally blocked from everything that is possible for me to do, right? Like I can't really do any type of advertising and I refuse to do anything that's not by the book because I don't want to jeopardize my agency. And so sometimes I'm just like, God, if anyone knew that I'm the owner of Roma Leaf, like, and the like, and how I'm not pushing it forward as much as I push my clients forward, they would be like, what's going on here? But like, it's just so weird. Like I get so stuck with that company sometimes and I don't know. I mean, I do know it's because it's CBD and all the prohibited ads and all of the things that I'm not able to do, but I'm always curious to hear from other people, especially you. You mentioned this honey CBD. I was just curious to know what were the some marketing things that maybe you guys tested that had worked.
Well, we for the honey CBD, we only did their brand and it was just a quick brand and we handed it off to them. So we did the research and did a really cool logo.
good, smart.
Yeah. And that's a lot of stuff. Yeah. Sometimes it's just that. And we made a cool logo and it's a little Buddha bee and I'm really happy with it actually. But we didn't go deep into the weeds on that one. I think there's just such broader questions about what the status of the marketing and advertising world is now. And so many things are changing. So maybe you're shadow banned, but also people are just sick of influencer marketing. Like they're not buying it. Everyone's pawning something to get something. And now, you know, the big the big idea has been micro influencers. So now it's just like everyone with 100 followers. And it's like, okay, but at what point do people not really care about or not trust you because you're just trying to get them to give you free shit so then you'll talk about it? And I think there's a world where that becomes like, we're all like the Avon salesman, we're selling Tupperware or something. And yep. I think the world, you know, Instagram was new at a point and this idea of influencer marketing was new at a point and it was working, but it's not new anymore. Wow. And people see through it. And so I don't know what the Web3 version is gonna look like, but I do think that consumers want mission-driven companies. They wanna be a part of that mission. There's interesting things in that Web3 allow that allow you to actually have ownership in the company. Like when you have a crypto or an NFT, you're kind of investing. And right. So again, I say that cautiously because there's a lot of bullshit out there, but there's also a lot of really good ideas. But this idea that NFTs are interesting, right? Because you can have an NFT that you sell and then that person sells it. And then you make money every time that person sells it. So it's almost like this pyramid scheme thing. And yeah. It's not necessarily a scheme, it's just an interesting way that this technology allows something to happen. And it'll be interesting to see how brands use that technology to put consumers in the position where they now become stakeholders in the company. And I think that somehow that's gonna be a thing.
I think so too, because if you go back, word of mouth marketing has always been the best way of marketing, in my opinion. It's just, and totally. In a sense, that's going to be it, right? Because if I have stake in a certain company that I'm buying my yogurt from or my candles from, guess what? Right. I'm going to promote the shit out of that. And I'm going to gift everyone that because I have a piece of the profit. So
right.
Awesome.
It's a way of raising money for your coin, right? Exactly. Now I own X coin and I want people to buy this product because if they do, the value of my coin goes up and somehow those are linked. And ideally it's the utopic version of that and not the garbage version of that. But as with anything, it'll probably be a little bit of both.
I love it. I think we're living in the most interesting era where so much changing so rapidly. And I love, you know, I know a lot of people complain about the pandemic and they, you know, they're like, oh my God, my life has changed. But for me, prior to the pandemic, we always had a lot of our clients are tech companies. So for us, Zoom meetings were normal. And so in a sense, now I'm like, oh yeah, guys, we were doing this like 10 years ago, like welcome to our world. You know, this is what's efficient, you know, driving an hour and a half to go meet. Yes, I love my in-person meetings, but you know, tell me a little bit about how the pandemic impacted you. Did it help you? Did it hurt you? Like,
oh, well, interestingly, so I'm an entrepreneur and I shifted a lot of focus away from my business to start my own business, which is an education platform.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah. And it's something I'm still working on. However, as it turns out, launching an in-person education platform during a pandemic, probably not the best call. But one happened before the other. And so I was knee deep in this thing and it was all about like, how can you connect communities through learning in person? And then the pandemic happened. And so it forced me to push pause on that, refocus on my business, and then just gave me a lot of free time. So I ended up writing a book and I ended up getting, so the pandemic just gave me time. Like I learned guitar. I think some people came out of the pandemic in shape with 10 new skills and some people came out depressed.
Right.
I'm proud of myself for coming out with a few new skills and a few new things that I did despite the hard business lesson. But we're still working on that project. So
tell me a little bit about the book. Is that something that's available our listeners can get a copy of?
Not yet, but I'm talking to literary agents. So if any of your listeners are a literary agent, reach out. It's kind of a half autobiography secretly and half spiritual adventure story about a dude who accidentally creates a living person inside of his computer in the vein of like A Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Like it's like a comedy, I guess.
Oh,
but it's like a spiritual adventure comedy that I just enjoyed writing. Yeah, I didn't know that I'd never written anything other than an email. And I just, for whatever reason, I was talking to my sister and she was like, you've had such a roller coaster. You should like write about it. Yeah. And I couldn't necessarily write about myself, but when I put it through this other story and used bits of my life to build the story, it got really fun and interesting. And so I was just sort of like in this choose your own adventure novel, but I was writing it as I was choosing my own adventure, you know, and it came together into something I'm really proud of. So I hope it goes somewhere.
Amazing. I can't believe we're coming to an end, Mike. Before we wrap it up, I do want to, I want to ask you to tell the listeners where they can get a hold of you and, you know, how they can work with you if they're interested.
Yeah, thisfeelsright.co is the website, or our Instagram, or email me at mk@thisfeelsright.co and tell me about your project. We're mostly on board with any idea.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you. This has been fun.
Thank you for joining Startup to Success with Maria on KLOS 95.5 FM HD3 SoCalArmenian.com.